woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Carroll. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 58. This is after a small sell-off yesterday. Well, actually, no, we were up yesterday. We were sell-off Friday. We looked like we might be down yesterday, but then we were not. S&P's ended up 13. NASDAQ up 59. But we have the Fed meeting today and tomorrow, the announcement in the press conference tomorrow. We have the CPI tomorrow morning and the PPI on Thursday, so it's the other way around this week. Do we have the Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
By the way, I think underneath the water there, somewhere down in the bottom, you know, from your bumper, start of your bumper music, you know, where's the money, Lebowski? I think that's where the GameStop money is.
Yeah, we've had some people, yeah, that thing is, traded,
That was a round trip, wasn't it?
Well, evidently the company made out like a bandit.
Well, you know, as I pointed out on X, you know, Twitter, whatever, when all this stuff started a couple of years ago, you know, this whole meme stop thing, if I'd taken MCS public, there, of course, would have been a probability of some percentage that my company would have gotten wound up in that stuff in some way, because we were a technology company, and all technology companies are, you know, subject to having that kind of thing happen, right?
You mean the dot-bomb thing, not the meme thing?
Well, same sort of thing. Assuming that my dot-bomb did not kaboom.
Right,
and I was still around and still running as the CEO of a public, now a public firm as opposed to a private one. After seeing the first round of this stuff with the craziness, with GameStop and, you know, AMC and all these other guys, I would have immediately filed a shelf registration.
Well, I think that's what they did.
Well, GameStop. Did it the second time around and you know, went through the process. I would have had the thing sitting in the closet.
Well, the first time was a shock for people.
Well, I understand that, but like I'm saying, I would have learned from the first one, okay, and I would have stuck a huge shelf registration in the closet.
All right, explain to everybody what a shelf registration. The first time through, I think, but I'm not positive, that the only firm that had any treasury stock was AMC. And they were able to, essentially...
Right, and they were able to issue into some of it, yeah.
And that pretty much saved them in COVID when all the movie theaters were closed.
Right, and so basically what that means is, for those who are unaware, your governing documents in a corporation control how many shares of stock you can issue, and for obvious reasons, that has to be disclosed to the public. You can't just, out of the middle of nowhere... Surprise!
Well, even if you approve 50 million for sale and only sell 30 the first time through, you can't just lob the other 20 out anytime you feel like it.
Yeah, there has to be fair disclosure,
right,
into the marketplace of what you're doing and what you would use the money for.
But if you buy some of the 30 that's out there back, that becomes treasury stock. Usually people do that to use it for stock options for employees and those kinds of things. But you can kick that back out.
Oh yeah, if you have them sitting in the treasury, you could throw them back out in the market at any time. You don't have to give anybody a warning.
They still have the 10-2 the rules got when I was on the floor way back before I traded the index. You could only let it out between like 10-2 and you couldn't do it. There are rules on when you could do it.
I think the rule is still on the books that you can't, you know, that you basically you can't tamper with either the open or the close. Essentially,
of course. Now, how do you know where the open and close is? All over the
well. I don't know how much this, you know, this applies nowadays. But you know, because now we have electronic trading, a lot of these stocks, you know, trade at 3 a.m. And you know, God knows why you'd be dumb enough to, you know, play in that low liquidity environment. But some people are. So I don't know if those rules have changed. But I would have immediately had a huge stash of Treasury shares sitting around with the explicitly declared purpose of capitalizing on any sort of market instability caused by a bunch of crazies. And I'd be very open with everybody. That's why we're doing it.
Well, sure. Okay? Yeah.
I intend to do this, and the proceeds are for general corporate purposes and to take advantage of people who are stupid enough to do this. And I would put it in exactly those terms, so nobody could try to sue me. Well, they'd try to sue anyway, but they'd lose. And you know, there would be, but yeah, here, you know, here we have this craziness. You know, this top ticks at 67.5, and you still have people. I got into it with somebody over the weekend. You still have people. This guy supposedly who runs some kind of private equity outfit. Now, of course, you know, on the internet, nobody knows if you're a dog, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, a roaring kitty. He puts his statements out there. You go, wait a minute, those his PTI statements, or is our name on the top? Are they really his brokerage statements? Nobody knows.
Well, for all I know, the guy fired up Excel, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are with this, you know, supposed, and these people. Well, if he exercises this, he's going to screw all the dealer. I'm like, you really are stupid. No, he's not going to screw any dealer. No dealer with the,
Where were you last week when I needed you? I was in the bar with nine people who supposedly know the industry. I was having this discussion. God, if he exercises these things, he's going to jam these guys all in his shorts and they all got to come. I said, no, they won't. They're already hedged off.
They were hedged off 10 seconds after they took the other side of his trade, okay? And I'm like, you're not going to jam anybody. The only thing that you're now, might you create temporarily some upside? Well, you know, buying creates upside pressure, right? I mean, you know, that's the way a capitalist system.
An exercise, $40 in the money, gives no upside pressure.
No, because it's already been hedged.
Not to mention the fact that the puts... You went technical on me. I'll get a little more technical. Not only that, the things probably had a premium. Because even when
and
it
you
was
just,
50
and you
bucks,
just destroyed the premium.
Yeah, you just buried your premium. When I say that, oh, God, Carl, look where you put me. If I own the 20 calls versus owning stock outright, what do I really have? I have the stock and I have the 20 put, correct?
Right.
So now the question is, if in a regular stock, and I'll use the term regular, if you've got, I'm looking at McDonald's, all right, McDonald's is $254. If you've got the 150 calls, I'm going to say out a month, the 150 puts are a penny.
Right.
Maybe, you know, I mean, the chances of McDonald's getting to 150, it's not zero, nothing's ever zero, but it's real minuscule. But I can't go back on my machine, but I'm going to say when the stock was, call it $45, the 20 puts were probably still $2.
Yeah.
Which means... That the 20 call, instead of being, let's say it's $45, instead of being $25, it's probably $27, right? Because it's going to carry the same premium as the put. So if he exercises them, he loses $200 times 120,000.
Right.
That's like a real number.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yes, he can, and yes, but the idea that this all of a sudden causes this huge spike, it doesn't. Because of the way market structure works, because nobody, except for somebody like him, is crazy enough to be short, naked, that number of calls. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. And so, I mean, you know, it's like what happened, you know, when I was in the middle of the crash, I shorted a bunch of GE puts naked on purpose, and got a phone call from the brokerage doing it. You know, do you know what you're doing here? Do you realize that you could be assigned? Yes, I'm actually trying to get assigned, sir. Oh, okay. You know, and they're like, well, you know, but this could have, you know, yes, you can see I have the cash to clear this transaction. Oh, all right. Yes.
Well, you can actually, if you have the cash in your account, it's not even considered a naked put. You can actually do that in IRA.
Yeah, I know.
A cash secured put.
But they were, you know, they were reasonably, I mean, I understand the reason for the call. It was, you know, it was not a small amount of money if I'd gotten assigned. Okay.
Right.
I mean, I was going to have to clear a very large transaction, but I had the money to do it, and I knew exactly what I was doing. I was like, yeah. As it turned out, it never traded through the strike, and so I just kept the premium. But it was, you know, it was a nice transaction.
It was touch and go for a while.
Yeah, but it would have been not. I mean, I actually, God, look at where that ended up. That would have been the trade of, you know, probably the trade of my life, if it had gone off. But I mean, I'm not unhappy. I made money on it. It was a profitable transaction. So yeah, but people that get it, that run this garbage, and the number of people that get suckered by this stuff. With this, oh yeah, we're gonna you know, take the shorts and put their, you know, their cojones in a vice. No, you're not. Not by doing this. I mean, could somebody, you know, do people get squeezed in a short? Well, of course people get squeezed when they're short. It happens. That's one of the risks of the game. But the idea that you're gonna generate that kind of a situation by doing it, no, you're not. No. And you know, the only person that got in the shorts is this guy. I mean,
what's he going to do if these things go all worthless?
Well,
they're down to $5.
Well, he's out the money, obviously. What I think is rather amusing here is that, you know, if this guy had a single brain cell in his head, he would have sold at least half of them immediately on the spike. The problem was he probably couldn't, because I don't think you could trade the stock overnight, but I don't think the options.
No, but you can, if you have those calls, you can offer all the stock you want above, and you're covered.
Well, that's right. You could, yeah, you could be out there on the you could hit those bids. Okay, you know, at 67.50.
Yeah. And, well, they were up for about a minute.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying, you know, but as many of them as you could get some, you know, some idiot to take the other side of, you could, you know, you could unload into that. And frankly, that he didn't do that, and then, you know, and then he has this little press conference, that he didn't do that is insane, because that would have immediately monetized the position. And what was he thinking? It was going to 200?
Well, you know, we actually had... believe this or not, but the FINRA people have decided now that they and they were very nice. They wanted to come out to firms and find out what's going on out in the frontier, meaning, you know, what customers and stuff are doing. So
yeah,
we actually had three people from FINRA in here yesterday, and they were very nice, and we talked about what we're seeing in clients and, you know, what the risks are and so forth. I don't know that anybody, probably at least maybe one of the ladies who was the manager could. I don't know. Can anybody even tell you what the rules are overnight? I mean, we can, you know, people can trade on our PTI Pro Direct platform overnight all you want, but I mean, does every firm make up their own rules? I mean, I'm not so sure. If you wanted a short stock in the middle of the night, where the hell do you even get a locate? How do you? I suppose if your firm, now that particular guy.
Well, if you happen to have him in. Within your firm, somebody else has the long position, then, you know.
Well, I mean, you'll get the idea to locate, but this guy didn't have to find a short because he had the calls.
Right.
But, like, during the day, for those that don't know, these are not arcane, but, well, they're sort of arcane when you can pay. During the day, if I'm on a floor to Cebo, but there's hardly any floor. But if I bought some in-the-money calls, I could exercise them that minute, and all of a sudden I have long stock to sell, so I don't have to short anything. But now in the middle of the night, how the hell do I do that? I mean, all these rules.
That's one of the problems, is that if, you know, the options don't trade overnight.
Well, the whole this is what I mean. I have this had this discussion with some of the younger fellows, okay, and a couple of them are in regulation over at the CBOE, and they come from a whole different world than me. Now, when I say that, my idea of a market, when you're underneath the buttonwood tree and when you did stuff, the idea is to have an exchange, have a place. Doesn't have to be physical, although physical is better, I think. There needs to be a place where natural buyers and sellers can come together and get a fair market at a fair time. And the idea is to, you know, it's not like you want to make it so that you can only trade for an hour or 2 hours or anything like that. But the point is, you want to have it in a situation where the buyers and the sellers basically do most of the trading with themselves, and the market makers only, I'll use the definition of the term, take care of very brief inequalities in supply and demand. But most of the trading and the price discovery is from the real buyers and sellers. This has been this the way it's been in the futures markets forever. You really want, most of the time, Kellogg's, who's a natural buyer of futures, and farmers who are natural sellers, to be in the same place at the same time. And the market makers just take up the momentary differences when the other guys aren't there, right? And they make a market. This idea of jamming this trade when nobody's around, to me, is reprehensible. And it always will be. I mean, what is the point of that?
Well, it's, you know, I used to get into it with people over this kind of thing, and with gold and silver in particular, because there's, you know, you always get this stuff about, oh, you know, these guys, they're short the futures, and you know, that's suppressing the price. And I said, do you realize that if I owned a gold mine, and I am reasonably confident that next month I'm going to get 400,000 ounces of gold out of that mine, okay, or 20,000 ounces, or however many ounces it is, because I've got an operating mine. It is digging ore out of the ground. It is, you know, reducing that to the actual material that I'm selling, and I don't care if it's copper, it's silver, it's gold, it's whatever it is, nickel. I've got this flowing stream of product. Anytime that the futures price is above my cost of production, I can guarantee my profit on that activity.
Assuming nothing goes wrong with the mine or the farm.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, well, okay. Some people don't.
Well, there's always execution risk. Okay,
well, there's always a hailstorm over your corn or something.
Well, that's right. Yeah. There's always execution risk on the forward activity, right? I mean, that's always there. You can't do anything about that. That's the nature of business. But if I am quite confident that I'm going to be able to deliver 20,000 ounces of silver next month, I would be crazy not to. If the current futures price is in excess of my cost of production, I'd be nuts not to be short that, because I'll just deliver the silver.
Right. Now, okay. The question is now, well, the other question, now that we're getting technical today, which we might as well stay there, you can have all the corn you want on your farm. It's only worth $5 a bushel in New Orleans.
Well, that's
or,
right.
Or in Marseille or wherever the delivery points are. So you got to get it there. So that's another issue.
Well, yeah, and you know, and things do go wrong, okay, but the entire underlying reason for a futures market in commodities is not so that somebody can screw the guy who wants to buy a bunch of silver.
And if it's done right, nobody ever delivers anything. The prices are supposed to match near the end.
They're supposed to, okay, but the thing is that what it gives me is the capacity to, same thing with farmers. It gives me the capacity to have a reasonable expectation that at the time that I get done producing whatever it is, I know what the price is going
right.
to be.
By the way, do you even know, when I first started, it must have been like the first couple of months, they had the big thing where the Brinks truck came down LaSalle Street and delivered all the silver for the Hunt brothers. Is the, I don't know, is the Board of Trade building still a delivery point for silver? I doubt if it is.
I don't think it is anymore. But well, I mean, you know, the same thing happens with oil, though. I mean, you know,
you got to get your oil at Cushing, Oklahoma. It's worth nothing.
It's not worth anything sitting in your truck in your backyard.
No, you got to get it to Cushing, Oklahoma. It better be a great grade. It better be everything else. So you're taking all these different adjustments.
Right.
I mean, even corn. It's a what is it number? Was it number two red or is that something? Or that's wheat. There's a specific corn grade that you have to deliver, and if you deliver another grade, you still can deliver it, but it's probably either got a premium or a discount associated with it. When I was I had a Board of Trade seat for a while. I did trades there through brokers. I never went on the floor and did a trade there, but the Board of Trade seat included an option seat, so I just had that one. People would argue back and forth between which seat was the better buy. And anyway, I used to get this thing every month. The bond that we used to trade back in the 80s was a 8.5%. Can you imagine that? 8.5% 30-year bond. The thing was trading, you know, like 65 or 70. That's how high the interest rates were. Now we get this huge printed out, there are enough ones on the internet, printed out thing every month. It had to be like 10 pages long, and it had a list like 1,000 bonds on there. And if you wanted to deliver the bond instead of that one, you'd get, you know, 0.99 for the thing, or the next one would be 0.98.
Yeah, there's an adjustment.
Yeah, the other one would be 101.2 or something. Depending on which bond you actually gave them, there was an adjustment on it, because you could deliver the bond. But I don't think I've ever did. I mean, you know, somebody maybe did. I never did. But, yeah, this can be very technical, but when people start doing stuff in the middle of the night, this is not, I mean, I don't want to know these rules, Carol. I'm never going to trade in the middle of the night, but I have clients. And my clients, if they're trading there, they better know them, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I see a lot of this kind of stuff. You know, there's all kinds of crazy, you know, crazy conspiracy stuff that's flown around for as long as I've been trading. And, I just can't understand why it, but it look, I mean, it looks like the GameStop people were ready this time, and they, you know, they took advantage and rickrolled these guys that were out there and, you know, were running this garbage on them this time. I still don't think the company has a, you know, has a forward process, because their business model got trashed by, you know, overcome by events, would be the best way to look at it. I mean, it wasn't that they expected that. It's just, that's the way life goes. And I'm not so sure the physical theaters, you know, AMC is another one. I'm not so sure those are you know, not going the way of the dodo. I mean, I have seen two physical movies in, I think, the last year. It may have been more than a year. And they were both IMAX presentations that I was willing to go, you know, I was willing to pay the, you know, the ticker to go get. And one was the new Top Gun movie, and then the other one was the second half of Dune. And I now own both of them on 4K, so I can watch them at my house. But the prevalence of widescreen TVs and decent sound systems at reasonably small ball money has really taken the game away from, you know, let's go to the movie theater. And then the other thing that's happened, and really, really has dampened my ardor for being willing to pay the ticket to go and see them anymore, is that now you get force-fed 30 minutes of commercials before the film starts.
I can't imagine.
Well, the previews, you know, there's always been previews, okay, which is, I don't have any problem with
that. Well, you see a Three Stooges short.
Yeah, or a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
And that was fine, but what you get now is half an hour of literally force-fed advertising.
It's all about what you evidently get used to, Carl. I mean, if you walk down the street every day and somebody sneaks out of a building and slaps you upside the head, I guess after a while, as long as it's not two slaps, it's okay. I mean, I can't imagine, if there was TV in my grandfather's time, him paying to go to a movie and watching a commercial. I mean, that's why he's there. To not watch the commercial, right? I mean, cable was supposed to have any commercials too, right? You know, over a period of time, nobody.
Yeah, well, originally cable, you know, the whole thing with cable was that it gave you a way to, you know, to get no commercials, like HBO, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, so I guess Here's what I've noticed out in the Orland area. Man, I don't really pay attention to city. Well, I haven't been to a movie longer than you, Carl. Let's put it that way. What I have noticed is what I understand from people that are going. You now got the big Barca Lounger chairs. The food is really pretty good. They got a bar there. And what it's buried in the Orland area is the after movie crowd in the pizza places and those kinds of places. There's a German place out there, really good, and they had a 10 o'clock crowd just before COVID, where they had, all of a sudden they shifted from dinners to really good sandwiches and stuff, and between the football stadium across the street for the high school and the huge multi theater place down the block, they would get a pretty big 9:30, 10:30 crowd. They don't get any of that now. And the pizza place, Fox's, that are ordering, I go, they close on Saturday night at 10 o'clock. Nobody goes out after a movie. Evidently, you eat and drink at the movie. So to the extent that they're still around, they've encroached on basically somebody else's business. I'm not saying encroach. I mean, you get to serve food if you want to. It's not saying you should, but I'm saying it's a different thing. And you and I taking the girlfriend there, sitting there for 2 hours and heading out to the pizza joint. That's not happening. It doesn't appear.
Well, that's one of the natural evolution of economic things and technology is that things change over time. You know, I mean, when I started selling internet access, it was we didn't even have graphical browsers. Okay, you logged into a Unix machine with a terminal. Okay, you essentially had a terminal, and then of course, you know, Mosaic comes out, but that was a pain in the butt to use. Because it was just difficult, and it wasn't until Windows 95 hit that everybody jumped on the graphical access bandwagon.
Well, Carl, what do you say we got to talk more about this on Friday? Plus, I don't know if you were able to listen a little bit yesterday. I just some of I'm digging more into this. People on the southern border, and I'm backing up, and I'm talking about our over time have we. Businesses, the U.S., other countries of the world, been part and parcel of these ridiculous governments being able to stay in place in these places, making it unlivable for people. I mean, in other words, if you really wanted to take the whole problem from front top to bottom, you're not going to get it out of Congress. Who the hell would even be capable of telling you what the solutions are? I mean, it's not just how these people got to one spot and how we got to stop them from getting across this river. The problem is much bigger than that, I think. But you're capable of digging into this. Let's dig on that a little bit on Friday.
Oh, yeah, I'll go after that. There's the crazy incentive structure that, especially within government, although it's not only there.
But I mean, let's talk about some other places, too, and whether, you know, our big companies, to a certain extent, are keeping these guys in power. Because they have
to. Well, of course, and they love every minute of it because there's money in it.
All right, we got to get to Carl, but SP Futures down 18, NASDAQ Futures down 68. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 17. NASDAQ Futures down 68. Dow Futures down 155. Individual stocks in the Dow. Nothing really crazy. We've got Salesforce down $1.19. I've got American Express down 94 cents. Apple down 86 cents after their big confab yesterday on AI, which didn't look like they sailed that much. Boeing down 92 cents. Over in Europe, we've got the Fed stuff tomorrow and CPI tomorrow, so everybody's kind of dancing on a pin on that. DAX down 139.8%, FTSE down 75.9%, CAC around down 88.1.12. So the CAC round's been down heavy 2 days in a row after the big election shock over there, and Macron saying he's getting rid of Parliament and all kinds of stuff. So UK wage growth holds at 6%. That must be year over year. They're doing better than we are on that, it appears. Asia, Nikkei up 96.2%, Hang Seng down 190. That's a full 1%, 18,176. So after being above 19, these guys look in danger of going under 18. These guys are all over the place. Shanghai down 23.8%. Yesterday, the market was up, was down some during the day, but then it was up. S&P was up 13, NASDAQ up 59. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.44. Been right in this middle of this, 4.4 to 4.55 for really quite a while now. Bund unchanged, 267. Japan down 2 basis points, 1.02. We've got oil down 13 cents, 77.61. Still really stuck between 75 and 80. Brent down 11 cents, 81.52. Natural gas up 14 cents, 305. Another, remind myself, what a great buy at 168. Do I have any? No. Gold down 320, 23.23. Silver down 56 cents, 29.30. Copper down 9 cents, 4.44. We have the U.S. dollar pretty much unchanged, 107.3 to the euro, 127.4 to the pound. Crypto, we've got down 2,816.6679. That's kind of a low recently in the Bitcoin. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Sox, ouch.
Morning, Chief. Yes, you're right. Sox, ouch. We'll get to that. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 53 degrees right now with a high of 73. Beautiful with times of clouds and sun. And tonight will be partly cloudy with a shower in spots with a low of 64 degrees. Order Phoenix, Arizona is 83 degrees right now with a high of 110. Hot with plenty of sunshine, and there is a danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for extended periods of time. So beware of that. Tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees as well. On the traffic in Chicago, we got inbound Kennedy from Monroe's is 19 minutes. You're looking at 41 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 33 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 33 minutes. On to sports in the MLB, White Sox, ouch. They lose to the Mariners in Seattle, 8-4. And today, the Cubs play the Rays at 5:50 p.m. The Diamondbacks play the Angels at 8:40 p.m. And the White Sox play the Mariners again at 8 p.m. At 8:40 p.m. On another news, the NBA Finals Game 2 was last week. The Celtics win with 105 over 98 points on the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks at home. And then Game 3 is this Wednesday, June 12 at 7:30 p.m. in Dallas. Also, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals Game 2. The Panthers score 4 unanswered to claim Game 2 over the Oilers. Back over to you, Chief.
When's the NBA 7th game? Thanksgiving? It's like 5 days between...
I'm not sure. I can find out, though.
I'm exaggerating. Do we have Joel?
Yeah, good morning.
How are you, bud? What's going on? What's going on in Detroit, as they used to say, Detroit?
We reopened the train station. Did you hear about that at all?
No.
There is an iconic building downtown Detroit, just off downtown on the river. And if you look for a symbol of blight and the decline of the city of Detroit, it was that vacant old train station. They shuttered it in, 1989. I know I remember Lisa actually taking a train from there to come and visit me in Chicago. It became in disarray, vandalized, and the Ford Motor Company put about $1 billion, $950 million into it to make it not a train station, but a new facility for Ford. They kicked it off last week. They had Diana Ross, Eminem, Jack White, just a huge celebration here. So nice resurgence to Detroit. It was free tickets and everything. So you want to know what's going on in the Motor City, Chief? It's the reopening of the train. You should look it at it. Look it up. It's an iconic building.
Real stupid question. Where do the trains stop now?
Well, they're not using it as a train station now.
But, I mean, you still can take the train to Detroit. The tracks still go through the station. Where do they go now?
Yeah, there's Royal Oak, Michigan. which is just outside of Detroit. That's a frequent stop. It also stops in Ann Arbor, Michigan, good old Ann Arbor. And then I'm not sure where else, but Royal Oak is a nice suburb just off the outskirts of Detroit. So if you want to take a train to Detroit, you're getting off in Royal Oak, Michigan.
I thought the guys, I have guys here, guys, who take the train up there to watch the Bears every year, and I thought they get off downtown somewhere. It's a quick ride to the station, you know, or to the stadium.
When I Google Michigan Central's station, that's what comes up here. So I'm sorry, I'm not
really?
I am not your coordinator here. Detroit train station. I mean, I haven't taken it in a while, Chief, but that's it. I mean, when they talk about Detroit train, like Royal Oak's not that far. I mean, it's like, yeah.
Well, South Bend, the train station, that whole area is now a internet hub. I'm like, well, where do the trains go? you can still stop. There's a South Bend stop, or whatever the hell it is. You can stop the station.
Are people still taking trains?
Oh, yeah.
Union Station. I mean, I don't know. I've taken that train from Chicago, Ann Arbor a few times. But
matter of fact, I think that's a 95-mile-an-hour track part of the way. It's a lot of people take it. And matter of fact, this one in St. Louis, the same way. It's real heavily used. That's another one of those where it's 90 miles an hour half the way or something.
Yeah, I'm on it now. The Royal Oak Station is the closest one. There's also one in Pontiac, and then there's one in Troy. So if you're taking the train in, Chief, I'll pick you up in Royal Oak. Pontiac's close to my house. But what's hurting the market today? Do you want to France?
Does it have to go up every day? Does it have to go up every day?
Does it have to go up every day? Yeah, it has to go up every day.
I
mean, right. I mean, keep your clients happy. I don't know if it's – is it France? You want to blame it on France? A little bit of chaos going on over there post-elections. I'm looking at the big boys here. I mean, they're down. Microsoft's down a little bit. Apple's down a little bit. Kind of a flop after the WWDC. NVIDIA. 10-for-1 split. That got a price target raise, but it's down a little bit. Blame the S&Ps on that. So I just think it's, it's nervousness ahead of the Fed. Really no major earning reports today, or really for the week for that matter, except for Oracle after the close. But after the close today, Eli Lilly's got some good news on some Alzheimer's drugs. That stock has just been on a tear. But just a little bit of a breather overnight. But they'll come in, Chief, and buy. This is a dip.
Right, oh yeah,
it's a dip. We're down 18 handles. Get in there and buy the. You should be doing this radio state call. You should be on the phone with your client saying, this is the dip.
We could be up 50 spoos, dropped them only up 45. It's the dip.
It's the dip. No, that. But I guess it's blame it on the Fed. Nervousness over the Fed. I don't. You know, who knows how to predict those numbers? They have been trending in the wrong direction. But we shall see. CPI and then PPI and then a Fed decision. So the bonds are telling you rates aren't getting cut soon. But who listens to the bond market, right?
Well, whether or not the rates kind of are getting cut, I mean, they've gone up the whole time they've gone up. So it's the idea that we're waiting for this cut. We've been up the whole way. The last thing we want is a cut, right? I mean, if you were, some man in the moon somewhere and you're listening to the radio here, why do these guys want to cut? All it does is go up when the rates go up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think the way people say that is the Fed started raising rates. The market went down. And now we're looking for the market to rebound with the rates get cut. But that's not what happened at all, right?
No. I mean, the market, we were trending lower. And then, Powell, did his, mysterious Fed pivot in October, November, at the end of last year. And here we are. almost halfway through the year, and there's no Fed cut. So our data-dependent Fed will give us some more information tomorrow, but right now the song, you know, stable for longer. I think that's one thing that I've tried to preach here on the show is stability in rates.
What at some point, and who knows when the point is or could never be, so I'm sure as hell not trading because I'm looking at these numbers. I can't, because if I did, I would be weird. I'm looking at this CrowdStrike, right? We had a earnings play in there, which didn't turn out so hot. The thing is up like $60 and so. Anyway,
how did it not turn out?
Well, we did the straddle was like $30, so we did a time spread for real cheap, and the thing's up like $60. It's double the straddle.
So you went short the straddle?
No. I bought the time spread, which what I do is there's some relationship. The straddle should sort of match up with the calendar spread, but it doesn't always.
Oh, I gotcha.
And when it doesn't, if the calendar spread is a lot cheaper than, quote, it normally is, I buy that. I mean, but then they got to pick the strike, and normally I pick like the strike where it is because I don't know if I'm not bullish or bearish. I don't know much about these stocks. So normally I make money if the stock stays within the straddle. But I'm only invested 40, 60, 80 cents, sometimes 8 cents. You know, it's a lot different than a 30-some-dollar straddle. You know,
so oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Close. But anyway.
I mean, yeah, added to the S&P. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But yep, I'm looking at their numbers now, and again, the current P.E. The trailing P.E. is 650. The forward P.E., if you believe their numbers, is 87. But I don't really go by P.E. that much, Joel, because it can, you know, P.E. can go all over the place. I look at the price to revenue, price to sales, because during the 2000 fiasco, the companies like Cisco and Oracle and those places got to, once they got over 10 price to revenue, that's when the thing all collapsed. Now, a lot of it had to do with the Fed and everything else at the same time. That didn't cause it. But it seemed like that was like the highest you could get before something bad happened. CrowdStrike's 26. It's 2.5 times higher than Cisco was in 2000. And I've got Microsoft at 14 or 12. I've never seen prices like this. Not in terms of PE, because you can grow into your PE. I don't know how you grow into your revenue. How do all these companies all double in 2 years?
More cyber attacks, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
it's cloud-based cybersecurity. But no, that's it. I got a hop here, Chief.
All right, bud, take care of yourself. You know, and did you go down to the big celebration, or you just saw it on TV?
No, I watched it on TV.
It
on TV. Okay.
All right
talk
care,
to you
bud.
Next week. Go blue.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Yeah, we'll just go right to you. Kenny, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. So did you sell your GameStop at 67?
No, but you know what? I was so vocal the day that the Monday morning, you know, after he'd come out on the Sunday night, he made this announcement, everyone got excited. They took the thing up 100% in the overnight trading, and everyone's like, you know, this is going to the moon. And I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This whole thing is ridiculous. But then the fact that GME came out and pre-announced their earnings a week ahead of schedule should have sent the message, and apparently it did, because they missed on their earnings. The stock immediately sold off, and now it's continued to come under pressure. So, you know, you and I have discussed this. I don't play in that space. I don't play in the meme stocks. I get it. It's all very exciting, but look at how quick the story changes. And look at, how would you feel if you were the guy in the overnight session, you went to Robinhood because you could trade 24 hours a day, and you buy GameStop at $40 because you think it's going to 80, and the next tick is $28. I mean, think about it, right? It's your own fault. I'm not saying it's anyone's fault. It's your own fault because you don't know what you're doing and you're just going along for the ride and you think, you know, this is easy. Guess what? Ain't so easy.
Well, momentum trade is the greater fool theory. I mean, I'll buy because there's one fool right behind me. The only problem is once in a while you're the last fool.
Right. Willing to pay the higher price. I'm going to buy it at 40 because someone's going to pay me 41, right? That's right. Until no one's willing to pay 41 and actually the next bid is 28. Right.
Well, yeah, Kenny. I have a I always have serious questions for you, but you're closer to the rules and the New York Stock Exchange and how you're supposed. I was going to say how you're supposed to trade stock in our era. They actually had some rules,
Yeah.
I think if the company was going to sell treasury stock, they needed to do it between, what, 10 and 2? Or there were all kinds
10
of...
And, yeah, I think it was 10 and 3. They had to do it now. They had to stop an hour before the close.
Okay, well, 10 and 3. I'm talking Central Time. You're talking Eastern
yeah,
Time.
Yeah.
But you pretty much had to stay away from the first hour and the last hour, right?
Correct.
Now, when this stuff goes in the middle of the night, do we just jettison all rules, or are there any rules?
Well, isn't that interesting? Because I agree with you. What do you do when Robinhood now allows people to trade 24 hours a day? I think you've now once again created this Wild West type of atmosphere. And then to your point, where do the rules start and stop? When is the hour before the hour after? Is it during the 9 to 4 official trading calendar, or is it whatever anyone wants to make up at the moment? That's where, you know, these are the unintended consequences of. You know, suddenly saying, oh, we're going to throw the doors open, let people trade whenever they want. I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's irresponsible, quite honestly.
Okay, where you might not know the answer to this, but you have a better chance of knowing. If you and I are Kenny and Chief, and we all of a sudden have this big company, and we buy in a bunch of treasury stock, where is the treasury stock? Is it some brokerage firm? It must be, huh?
You know, that's interesting. I don't know where they hold the treasury stock. It's either in their own, it's either in the company treasury or it's in some brokerage. Yeah, I would imagine.
But it's got
to
be.
At least if they sell it, they got to transfer it to a brokerage, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that it's paper stock. They don't turn it into paper. No one does that anymore.
No, correct.
It's someplace. So yeah, they. I guess my question is, could they lob it out there at 5:30 at $60 a share if somebody's watching?
There you go. Therein lies the what's the rule. The rule says you're supposed to be out of the market an hour, the first hour of trading and the last hour of trading. So I guess what's the rule? Where's the hour of trading? Is it the official 9:30 kickoff at the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, or is it some other arbitrary hour? That's the question, right? And that's the unintended consequences. So how do you handle these? How do you answer these questions? I think it's the official opening. So I'm going to go with the 9:30 opening to 4 o'clock close. But, you know, I'm sure someone, you know, 20 years younger than me is going to say, I'm a dinosaur. I don't get it. That's not the rule at all. Well, yes, it is.
Well, if anybody pays any attention. But I mean, suppose I don't trade. Actually, you can trade on our PTI Pro Direct. We'll trade in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have many people do that. We have a couple of people trade a little bit after the close on an earnings, but that's about it. But I mean, how do you, if I wanted to, you know, say I had enough money in my account at IB, I don't have an account at IB, I got one at RBC, but if I wanted to short it, who the hell even does a locate at 3 in the morning?
I have no idea. Does it happen automatically? When you go into your broker, you know, if you're trading through E-Trade, is it Morgan Stanley's responsibility to check, or is it, if you go into Fidelity, I'm not sure you can do it through Fidelity. I don't think Fidelity allows 24-hour trading yet, right?
Well, I think the thing lets you know if they have a locate in place. So
right.
if you want to short something, I think it'll let you know whether you can or you can't.
Right.
But how do you yes. how do you locate something at 2 in the morning?
Yeah, well, I don't know, because I don't trade at 2 in the morning, so I'm not locating. But yes, to your point, I don't know how you do that, right? It must happen automatically, right?
So the treasury shares must be somewhere in the system, or else they would have to essentially short stack and then deliver to the short, right?
Correct.
So they must be somewhere where they can unload it. So it's got to be at a firm someplace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be someplace. I hear you. I don't, you know, I haven't really given that much stuff, just because it's not a space that I play in, so it's not something that I know, although a couple of phone calls, you figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you and I had a company that everybody thought might ever be one of these companies, we'd have something available that if the thing tripled, we'd be a seller. I mean, that's what got AMC through the entire COVID, wasn't it? Being able to sell stock during the meme stuff?
Yes, that is.
Otherwise, I think they'd have gone broke.
I think you're right. You know,
but you know, it was bizarre, and I've mentioned it a couple of times, but it's kind of important, I think, because even people that are in the industry, when I say the industry, these guys are futures traders, so they're sort of in the industry, were absolutely convinced, and I could not dissuade. I had five, it was 5-1, Kenny. Where the hell were you when I needed you? They were absolutely convinced that if this gentleman, a roaring kitty were to exercise his calls, he was going to jam everybody into a short position. And I kept explaining, it's not going to happen. Everybody's, the people who he bought those from, $40 into it, have already either have other options or they have stock, and all they're going to do is cause a change in position.
You would hope that that was going to be the way it would happen, right?
Yeah, and then that somebody who's capable, who's comfortable, or whoever it could be, being short, a naked short a 10 lot of a $40 option, is going to be just as comfortable being short the stock. It's the same thing.
Right.
But, I mean, I got nowhere with this. They were absolutely convinced. But the Internet, the whatever the X's are, the experts, were absolutely convinced that he was going to jam the whole world up with this exercise. And yet there was no voice of reason from the industry anywhere that I saw. Except me, and I lost. Just saying.
Yeah. I it was very interesting to see how that whole thing unfolded last week, right? How his overnight tweet, all the excitement around it, the fact that he was going to host this YouTube, then they would try to debate, well, is he you know, who's backing him? Can he really have that much money? Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the guy make tons of money 3 years ago when it went from $5 to $500? Didn't he cash out and walk away and ring the cash register with tons of money?
Well, yeah, but nobody knows how much. I mean, it's not like he's giving you a statement. I mean, if he had an account at PTI,
correct.
I'd never tell. I mean,
I understand that. But what I mean is, I think he had plenty of his own money, but it didn't make a difference to me whether or not someone was backing him or not backing him. The fact is, it was his trade. He's not managing money for somebody else. It's not like he's a hedge fund manager or an asset manager. He's just some kid on YouTube going, this is what I'm doing. If people choose to follow him, which they did, then that's what they choose to do. But that's on you. That's not on me. I don't think that's a violation of any law. Who says you can't? Listen, I said this in my notes. BlackRock owned 38 million shares of GameStop. Are you buying GameStop because BlackRock owns 38 million shares? Apparently not, but you are buying it because little kitty says, I'm long, you know, 120,000 shares or whatever the number was, and everyone gets all excited.
Kenny, well, it's roaring kitty.
Whatever, roaring kitty, little kitty, whoever. But yeah, no, I hear
there's a big difference, for God's sake, between a little kitty and a roaring kitty.
Vanguard owns 32 million shares of GameStop. I don't see people going, oh, I'm going to buy GameStop because Vanguard owns 32 million shares. They don't.
Well, and plus, this whole idea, I knew I was losing a debate, Kenny, which I do all the time, by the way. I knew I was losing the debate when I said, how do you even know that's his position? What do you mean? That's what he put out there. It's not the official PTI statement coming from RBC. It doesn't have RBC on the top of the thing. Why would you ever believe it? And they go, do you mean?
Well, they were trying to verify, right? Because they were trying to verify that, in fact, what he said his position was, in fact, what it was.
All right,
I don't pay enough attention again because it's not my space, so I don't really care.
All right, so if I tell you I own 120,000. By the way, when did the position limit get to be 250,000 contracts? It was 2,500 when I was on the floor.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, okay, but if I were to tell you, Kenny, I'm long 120,000 of the June, this week, by the way, 20 calls, what if all along the way I've sold some 30s and 40s and 50s into it, and I forget to tell you that part?
That's right. They conveniently leave that out. You don't know what he's done, right? Unless he divulged it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if this dude is still long these 20s at the price he paid for them and didn't sell a one, I wonder what we need to send him to some asylum.
I hear you. Listen, you know me. I don't, trading options as a full-time basis was never my shtick, but because it just wasn't what I was doing when I was in my career, right? But it seems amazing to me that, you know, he makes this announcement and tells you he owns X amount of stock plus he controls X more through an options contract. It is kind of interesting to me that you know, that he can have that much control of it, which I guess he can if he's got the cash to back it up, but he's not somehow protecting himself, like you said, he sold against it to protect himself, right? Just in case something goes awry. And I think that's what you have to do if you're managing risk properly. I can't imagine you're leaving yourself completely exposed.
Well, you know, sometimes there was a, you might know this, but I don't want to use the name because I think I remember the name, but I'm not positive. Back before the dot-bomb thing, I keep using, Kenny, I look at these price valuations. I was looking at CrowdStrike, you know, 26 times price to revenue, right? I'm going, ugh.
Yep.
I mean, back in 2000, I used to follow, the reason why I followed Cisco is because our buddy Dr. J talked me into doing a seminar where people had all this Cisco stock, and they were looking for repair strategies after it went down. Well, this, most of them had bought it at 55 or 60, and it was trading 6. So I might be Harry Houdini in some ways, but I'm not that much of a Harry Houdini to be able to fix that one, right? But there was an outfit in, I believe it was Akron, Ohio, that was the single big, other than the Cisco employees and the people who worked there, the single biggest holder of Cisco from the day the thing was IPO'd, which had to be like way before 2000, right? I counted when we changed offices in 2000, Kenny, we had, I think, 18 or 20 Cisco routers in our place. Because every time you got a feed from somewhere, it was another router. We moved in a new place, I think we got one, and it handled everything. So this guy, he had all these investors, and he beat the market every year from whenever Cisco came out to, you know, the 2000. What was the IPO price, like 5 or something? I don't even remember.
I don't remember either.
But it had to be down that low. And he did it all the way up to 66, I think was the high, and wrote it all the way down to 6. Never bought a put, sold a call, or sold a share. Just wrote it up and down the whole way. How many people in his GameStop, you know, had it at 20 and he didn't really see it trade 67, but never even thought to sell a share. I mean,
I agree, which is what's amazing to me, especially when the thing, you know, the other day when it ran 100%, it went from $22 to $46, and people are buying it up 100%. They're not selling it. Is amazing to me.
Yeah,
right. Just amazing.
But when they made a penny last year in the first quarter this year, they lost 12 cents. What's the attraction to this place?
Right. The attraction is that this roaring kitty guy has this reputation that this generation can't let go of. Right. They think it's so amazing. Look at how great this guy is. Oh, okay, it's fine until it isn't. Notice. The thing has collapsed. I think it was down 12% yesterday, Jimmy. It's trading back at 20, whatever it is, $26 or whatever it is a share. And suddenly it's gone quiet. No one's talking about it. Where's Roaring Kitty today? What's he doing?
Well, if we get sued by calling him Little Kitty, then I'm going to say it's all on you because I never said that.
Really? Someone's going to sue me because I called him Little Kitty?
I'm just kidding. It's Roaring Kitty.
Yeah, I know what it is. I'm just me. I'm just having fun.
I know. It's a. Plus by the way, do you have an outfit like his the next time you go on TV?
No. No, I do.
Where would you even buy something like that?
I have no idea. I have no idea where you buy something like that.
I'll bet somewhere in Florida, downtown somewhere, or New Orleans. You probably get it in New Orleans.
Yes.
Well, you take care. Are you guys real hot down there, like the Southwest, or are you all right?
Well, now we're in that season where, you know, in the middle of the day, it'll rain for 10 minutes, and then it gets really hot and sticky and humid. But that's, you know, it's June in Florida, right?
Well, we're, last couple of days, we're 50 at night and 70 during the day. Doesn't get any better than this for me.
Yeah, for you, it's perfect. This is a great time of year up in that part of the country, even in the Northeast, like up in Boston or New York. This is really a beautiful time of year in terms of the weather. But look, it is what it is, right? I'm going to go up and spend the month of July up in Cape Cod like we do.
One of these days, I got to meet your butt up there because I love it up there. I've only been there once, but I've never... We stayed in West Dennis. Are you near there?
Yeah. Well, I'm probably 30 minutes from West Dennis. We're right on the canal, right on in Buzzards Bay, but on the mainland side. So I actually, what's better for me is I don't have to go over the bridge and fight the traffic, right? I get off right before all the traffic, but we're right at the mouth of the canal.
Oh, so you're not as far out.
I'm not as far out. So for me, coming from New York, it was always great because it was a 3-hour ride from Westchester to Buzzards Bay. If I had to go all the way down the Cape, like into Dennis or Harwich, you know, it would have been at least another hour and a half for my ride, you know?
Yeah, one of my buddies used to work at the Barnstable House.
Yeah.
Barnstable's
beautiful.
Which allegedly is haunted, by the way.
For people that have never been to the Cape is absolutely spectacular. You know, go all the way down Truro and Wellfleet on the outer part of the Cape. You go to a Brewster on the inside. You go all the way down to Provincetown, which is really eclectic, but it's a great a place to go and at least visit. The shoreline along the outer
Cape unreal.
Is just...
It's unreal. It rained the whole time I was there, but still it was gorgeous. We went down to the beach in the rain. We didn't care. It was so nice.
Yeah, see, now you brought that up. Now it just started raining again here. I'm looking out the window because I got to go do
all right, my that's not my fault. It's not my fault. Kenny, take care of yourself. As usual, good stuff. SP Futures down 13. NASDAQ is down 47. Be right back, Professor Hale.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Good morning. Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Well, no pay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamayo. Carter on the board. SP Futures up, down 13. Nasdaq Futures down 45. Come back a little bit here. We've got the Fed meeting starting today. Tuna fish sandwiches for 2 days for those guys. And then the announcement tomorrow and the press conference. And we have the CPI tomorrow, which I'm just going to bet that they already have the number. Just saying. And we have the PPI on Thursday. And I'm going to bet they have that number as well. And I'm going to think maybe does Hal Snart, does he have the numbers? Is he Beaks when it comes to these numbers?
I think the Fed is probably having something other than tuna fish sandwiches.
We had a guy on the board of the CBOE. I'll not mention his name because I don't remember his name. He came from the Merck, and the then chairman brought him over. I have no idea why, other than the fact that he was going to vote for everything the guy wanted to do. That's really the reason why I keep it on. So the guy let it be known that at every board meeting, they said, you know, you go to different places, or with New York, meet a couple of member firms, or in Washington, it would be usually at a hotel. So out of the, I'd say we had 10 or 11 board meetings, 7 or 8 were here, and 3 of them were elsewhere. He let it be known that at every single meeting, he wanted a tuna fish sandwich available if he didn't like the rest of the chow. Now, if he liked the rest of the chow, the tuna fish sandwich sat there uneaten, and that was okay. But if he didn't like what else was there, he had his fallback position, the tuna fish sandwich. Which
was he actually eating tuna from a can with mayo?
Well, I mean, wherever they got the chow catered from. So, I mean, we got a tuna fish sandwich from, like, Ceres in Chicago. It was really a good tuna fish sandwich. I mean,
it's not. When I think of tuna fish sandwich, I think of canned tuna mixed with mayonnaise.
Well, yeah, but you put other stuff in there, I mean, to make it better, a little celery. I mean, you could spruce it up. Well,
I don't think that guy's having that kind of tuna fish sandwich. He's probably having fresh tuna fish, right?
No, it was whatever you got from whatever, you know, from the deli.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a bigger can than you and I would open, basically. But, but I mean, he had his backup sandwich, you know. So,
well, you know, those the Fed eats pretty well. I went to the Fed in Richmond. And we had a day at the Fed with the students at North Carolina NT State University, I don't know, 10 years ago or more. And the dining hall was incredible, just incredible. It felt like I was sitting in a wardroom, the officer's wardroom, and having dinner and being served with, you know, white tablecloths and, you know, people dressed in tuxedos. And It was crazy what kind of service they got there. It made me want to go to work there. And then I got to look at their gym, the gym that was on facility there, and it was just incredible. I was like, wow, this is a pretty good gig.
They have this massive building a block away from where we are here, and it was after 9/11, the thing totally gets hardened. They spend millions of dollars making sure you can't attack the Fed and everything. Of course, you could kill everybody you wanted across the street, right?
Yeah,
you know, who cares about that? But and they have a huge cafeteria in there, and you got all this security and all this stuff. And nobody works there. Everybody works from home.
Yeah.
This place is like empty. I mean, this idea that all these exchanges, which all they do is charge people money, they're supposed to be doing something worthwhile, when all they do is charge people money for quotes and stuff, to where the thing becomes an icon unto its own, where they can just raise prices whatever they want. Or the Fed, nobody's working.
Mm.
I mean, other people are back to work. I mean, they're not. They're just, you know, we don't work. We do our regulation from Arkansas or someplace. Really,
I mean, it makes me question how much work they actually do.
It doesn't make me question at all. I know. I mean, why do one guy and he comes in? He has to let him know he's coming in, so they have a desk for him. His office. Wow. I don't want him to do the offices. I mean, it's insane, and yet, you know, that's okay. But government work is government work, I guess, huh?
Yeah, when I worked in the Navy, I was an instructor at the Idaho Falls National Engineering Lab. It was like 6,000 feet above sea level, about 50, 60, 80 miles from Idaho Falls, Idaho, west. And it seemed like at the end of every month, or at the end of every fiscal year, they would dig up these holes in the lawn, and then a bunch of engineers would kind of stand around the hole, and you come to work the next day, that hole would be filled in, and there'd be a new hole they'd all be looking in, right? And I got to the point where I just assumed they're probably trying to burn up the budget, right? They have to use the budget this year. They don't use up the budget, they get a cut. So it just, and then my uncle Paul, he had just graduated with his engineering degree, and he got a job out there as an engineer, and he's a busybody. He's the kind of guy that wants to be doing something every 5 minutes, you know, productive work. He's this, you know, old school farmer from Idaho that was working all the time. And now he's an engineer. He got his engineering degree at 35, and he's still the same way, right? So he's driving around with blueprints under his arm, trying to stay busy because they'd give him like one project a month. When he worked at a private engineering firm in downtown Idaho Falls, he probably had maybe five projects a week that were just as comprehensive as that one project he was given a month to work on at the INEL. So there's a lot of waste and abuse.
There was some waste always at even in a private firm. When I worked at Pullman, when you sit down, you had a phone on your desk, and your first day there, nobody knows who the hell you are. You've got nothing to do, right? You know, but except hope for the phone. Plus, as time went by, and I became the financial project manager for the MBTA cars, all the other people, if I had nothing to do, I'd just go sit and, like, the guy who was in charge of something for that thing and ask what he was doing and how it affect things and how it affect the budget. I mean, I actually learned a lot from a lot of really bright people, but you were expected to do that because nobody just sat at their desk and did emails all day. I mean, it was a wholly different situation. But I always liked the idea. Remember, everybody's going to say how old I am on this, but remember the original book, original tell-all book by Jim Boughton, Ball 4?
Ball 4, huh?
Yeah, that was when he talked about Mickey Mantle running under the stands and looking up the girls' dresses and stuff. And it was an original, like, tell-all book. Nobody had ever done that before. But he talked about in the spring training, he goes, once you get there in the morning and you do your running and you do your drills and you can't throw all day, he says you got nothing to do, but you also couldn't leave. He says, so he'd sit in the dugout, like looking like he was thinking about doing something, and everybody'd stare at him because he had the coaches to finally pick up his mitt. And I'd stride purposefully toward the bullpen. Then I'd get to the bullpen and I'd do some stuff there and talk to some people and sit down. And finally, when people say, what the hell is he doing down here? I'd pick up my mitt and I'd stride purposefully back to the dugout. And I did this all day long. And everybody thought I was always going to the next place because I had something to do when I had nothing to do. But so there were guys at Pullman out of the engineering group. They maybe didn't know enough, as many people as me, or have the same gift of gab. If you're an engineer, all you had to do was put your white hat on, because you were like a guy that knew something, right? And you'd have a big roll of big thing of drawing in both hands. You just walk around the plant and just like observe stuff and just look at stuff and just keep walking. But as long as you had the roll of drawings in your hand and you had your white hat on, they figured you were doing something or knowing something, and you just kept going.
It was quite a bit. It was like that in the Navy too. I mean, on the ship when we're underway, we're supposed to be like, you know, Phil Bane cleaning the engine room. That meant, you know, covering dirt with paint for the most part.
God, hey, I have a very serious. As we were trying to, without boring the hell out of everybody, every problem that comes up now, we're actually trying to scratch the surface of it. I mean, underneath, because now it struck me this weekend, and when Biden came out with his border thing, both sides immediately jump on them, right? So whatever it is, there's like no solution that anybody's going to take. Whatever it is, it's not far enough or it's too far. We just got into that. And I just wonder if we're even capable of having people from both sides of the aisle sit down for a weekend or whatever somewhere and have somebody who maybe knows the hell he's talking about actually present the whole thing to everybody, both sides, as to what's happening, where these people are coming from, blah, 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 and what the governments are like, where they're at, those kinds of things. And that somebody actually understand, by the way, Nicaragua, we were talking at my reunion last weekend, one of the guys who was a freshman with us, he left Nicaragua and his family was in danger of being shot because they were on the opposite political party or whatever. Well, it's 50 years later. The guy's family's like still in trouble. They're still down there. The government hasn't changed. I mean, or hasn't particularly, I mean, are we part of keeping those guys in order in government because we have to play ball with them in order to get whatever product we're looking for out of there? Do you end up supporting the bleep in power because you want you're exporting, you know, rubber or whatever it is, or cocoa or oil or whatever? Do you end up actually stopping the normal, as they used to say in Star Trek, you know, you're interfering. We're the prime directive, which you can't interfere. Do we interfere? But anyway, that's setting up a one story that we're trying to maybe talk about on Friday or a little bit today if you want. But the other one was, you mentioned last week, we were talking about how the Navy seems now caught, maybe the Air Force too, with maybe having to fight a war for the last 30 years they haven't thought that they needed to. We'd wrap up every war in 3-4 weeks. Well, now Lou sent out a thing, I don't know if you read it, one of his Navy buddies, a whole thing about how now that we have, are actually doing stuff is the wrong term, but we're actually, you know, in the Red Sea for a long period of time. We don't have enough ships that supply ships. We lost the capability of transferring arms on the water. We don't have enough oilers and all these kinds of things. And how we should really look at a lot of the ships we have in mothballs, and are any of these, can we just pop them out of there and fix them up? Because he said we basically need, you know, another 100 ships right now, or 150. I remember you saying, once they're there, they atrophy so fast that it's not worth it. And yet, somehow or another, is there a solution to this that isn't $90 bazillion? Because it doesn't look to me like if we're going to actually do something with the Chinese, which I hope we never have to, we got 10 aircraft carriers. They take out 3 or 4, and we got nothing behind them that I could see.
Yeah.
I mean,
the best strategy is not to engage in war.
Well, I get it. I get it. But, I mean, it seems like we, according to this article, and actually some of the stuff you've said, that we haven't had to do anything for like a year, not that we ever want to, in a really long time. And in fighting a war for a year versus 3 weeks brings out a whole new level of supply, a whole new what kind of shells you need, what kind of... And since you're our Navy expert, what is the drill there? Can you drag these things out of mothballs? And do we have enough dry docks to put them in to try and fix them? And what is the status of the supply? If we needed... We say, okay, these 15 supply boats look like they're in halfway decent shape. Do we even have 15 places to send them where they got a dry dock you can fix them? Or are those guys all out of business?
Well, I think we've focused on these advanced weapons and the sexy weapons, you know, the jets that fly off aircraft carriers. And I think the kind of warfare we want to engage in now would be like what is probably happening to us right now, you know, cyber attack. I mean, if you're going to engage in warfare, I would think that you'd want to maybe... And I think we're also relying on drones a lot. But again, I don't think we need to have... there's no reason to have this war in Ukraine. There's no reason to have this war in Israel. And I think
when has there ever been a reason for a war to happen?
Well, you know, I think the people that kind of pull the strings, they want the wars, right? They wanted us in World War One. They want us in World War Two. And you know, blew the Cold War out of proportion. You know, they're talking about how the Soviet Union was 50% of the United States in terms of GDP. It never was. It was about 5%, right? So they make these... The Department of War, the National Security State, Department of Defense, they create these boogeymen, if you will, and then they create fear. And I think all these wars that we're engaged in are really just wars over oil. They're wars over, you know, minerals. And that's exactly what this war in Ukraine is.
But I mean, on many levels, you can't find anybody to agree with you more than me. Yet I also know Mike Royko's definition of war. They got it. We want it. Let's take it. There's always somebody willing to do that. And you got to be careful where you're going with this is, if we didn't have any bullets anywhere, everything would be okay because everybody else is just a nice guy. That's not true.
Well, I think if you just engage and trade with people and game in your favors.
All right, so Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe.
Yeah, or was.
It was, and I said to Lou the first day that this thing that they invaded. This is a long time ago. And I said, Lou, what are they even doing? Wasn't it easier just to trade with these guys and feed your people and do all the other stuff? And Lou's response to me was, Tom, you got to get out of that mentality. These people do not think like you and never will. They want it. They think it's theirs. They don't care who's there. They don't care who they kill. They just want it. You think you can have all the reasons in the world why it doesn't make any sense logically. The fact is, they're going there.
Yeah, I just don't agree with that. I think if we just stayed out of Ukraine and we allowed Ukraine to be independent, there wouldn't have been a war. But we have to add them to NATO. And when the former Soviet Union fell apart, we promised that we would never add Ukraine to NATO. And we reneged on that. I mean, the United States has a history of making treaties with people and then not abiding by those treaties. We did that with the native peoples.
But we didn't.
We did that with Russia and Ukraine. Now we're saying they got to join. We the Department of Defense created a coup in 2014 with both Republicans and Democrats on board with it. And that's the reason why we have this war today. I mean, if we stay out of these foreign entanglements, we wouldn't have this war going on. Ukraine would be independent.
We can engage in this self-flagellation. Those things that we did, I think, were mistakes. And I think, well, the other example would be the, I think she was an ambassador. Well, I know she was an ambassador to, she was Iraq or someplace in the Middle East. And somehow or another, the people in Kuwait were sticking oil wells underneath the border and stealing some of Iraq's oil.
Oh, yeah.
I think her response to Saddam or whoever was, if you want to kick these guys a little bit away because they're stealing your oil, I guess it's okay with us. And then they ended up invading the whole place, raping and pillaging and doing all that stuff. That's not what we meant. So even if she mistakenly misspoken, she didn't cause those guys to go in there and start raping other people's women and killing people and stuff. I mean, we didn't, our missteps did not create Putin. He was there. He's there on his own. I mean, anybody who can do what he's doing—it's not—it's not in response to us having John McCain going over there and giving a speech.
I just don't agree with this premise that there'd be a war had we not invited Ukraine into NATO. We promised that Ukraine would never join NATO. I mean, that would be like—I mean, what we're trying to do in Ukraine would be like missiles in Mexico.
I know, but these are negotiated stuff. We would, if the Ukrainians decided to rejoin the Soviet Union, we wouldn't invade them and kill everybody. That would be a negotiation. I mean, these people are bad people. I mean, Putin doesn't care.
They're bad people, but they're bad people all over the world. We're going to fight every bad person.
Well, no, but I'm saying, I mean, whenever we don't, look what happens. Unfortunately.
I think we're the cause of a lot of these problems throughout the world. I mean, did we have to meddle in Iran? Did we have to meddle in Egypt? Did we have to meddle in Libya? Did we have to meddle in Afghanistan? The British tried to turn the Afghanistan people into British, and they said no, and it bankrupted them. Well, we tried to make them American during the 1980s, and it almost destroyed us too. Well, and the Russians tried to do the same thing.
We should have made it. Militarily, when the people were using Afghanistan as camps for attacking here on 9/11, you could have just set, 50 missiles and 15 B-52s, the entire area where they were, you could have just leveled the damn place as an example to everybody and just never put Soldier One in the place. We could have done that. I mean, maybe that would have been smarter.
But I think those camps were there because of our past actions.
Well, whatever it is, you have to protect yourself to a certain extent.
But we have to start learning lessons of history. I mean, we really honestly have to.
I am so far with you, you don't know. But what I'm saying is, at the end of the day, we made probably mistakes in dealing with Hitler. We didn't create the man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we created the environment. We created the environment for him to rise. The Treaty of Versailles that Keynes predicted would lead to such a nation in Germany. He actually was the author of the war reparations.
He's the guy who did it. He was the economist at Versailles, right?
Yeah, and he's one that authored the war reparations article of that treaty that led to Hitler, and he predicted that it would lead to a guy like Hitler, right? So if Woodrow Wilson had stayed out of that conflict, we wouldn't have been in World War One. If England and France stayed out of that conflict, it's a regional conflict. And the only reason why France and England jumped into it, and we jumped into it, because we wanted a piece of the action over the Middle East. We should have stayed out of that whole thing, and it would have been resolved quicker, I think, and less deadly.
Well, I don't know that the people you're talking about that are that you're assuming can all of a sudden become Solomon and solve these things. They never have.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they want to solve anything. I think what they want is war, because war is good for their bottom line.
Well, you're going to get.
It's not good for our bottom line, but it's good for.
Well,
the
you're
going to
get some places that make bullets. I agree with that, but I don't. This whole, I mean, I don't. I think in retrospect, John McCain maybe shouldn't have gone to Ukraine and made that speech. But it doesn't matter. I mean, these people. Putin does not like the idea that Gorbachev gave up these places and made let them independent. He wants Russia back together.
I don't necessarily think he wants Russia back together. I don't think he wants NATO missiles an inch away from his border.
But when has NATO ever done anything preemptive to him? Never.
Would we consider it an act of war if Russia partnered with Mexico and put missiles along the Rio Grande?
Because they're Russia.
We wouldn't like it.
Yeah, but I know, because they're Russia. They have a history of doing bad stuff to people.
Let's just say China did that. We wouldn't like it either.
No, because they're doing their best to do whatever they
Or let's say North Korea did it. We wouldn't like it either. Or even if Brazil did it, I don't think we'd like it if Brazil put missiles on the Rio Grande. I don't think we'd like any nation other than Mexico put missiles on the Rio Grande. I don't think we would. I don't think we'd tolerate it. We consider it an act of war.
I'm trying to draw a line here between. Making some mistakes or giving people the wrong idea or maybe mentioning to Hitler that we would stay out of, I don't think we did, but that we would stay out of Poland or something if he invaded it, still doesn't give the man the right to invade Poland.
Well, but we got to remember, we're not learning lessons from history.
Whoever
does.
We're
just not. We're interfering in these people's internal affairs, and we shouldn't be, and we've been doing it... we've been inventing excuses to go to war all the way back to the late 1800s.
I don't think we invented. Nobody was more isolationist than we were before World War II.
Oh, but, I don't agree with that. I think the Spanish-American War was invented. I think World War I was invented. World War I was invented to divvy up that part of the world.
I mean, the
British, the French, and the Americans wanted that part of the world.
What part of the world?
That they wanted to divide up that entire region. They wanted control. They wanted the property rights. They wanted control over that entire region.
Well, I mean, the Dutch were the worst at that, and the Brits. We were never. Our big companies are colonists, but the U.S. never was.
I'm just saying that we have to learn from mistakes.
I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, absolutely.
And we're just not learning those lessons, right?
Well,
we topple.
Well, we
topple the Shah in Iran, and we have even worse.
I don't think we toppled him. We toppled the guy before him.
We supported it. We supported that. Jimmy Carter supported that.
And the Ayatollah said he wasn't going to make a religious dictatorship out of it. The minute he got there,
of course, that's what they tell you, right?
But I mean when Jimmy Carter making a mistake doesn't make the Ayatollah. a good guy.
But we toppled Assad. We toppled Assad, or we were trying to topple Assad. We toppled the guy in Iraq. What was his name?
Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, Saddam Hussein. We toppled him, and we got something.
Well,
worse.
He also started a big war. But we toppled
Muammar Gaddafi, and we got something worse. Oh, we toppled Mubarak, and we got something worse.
Well, I mean, Muammar Gaddafi was a guy who was a hijacker and killed people on planes, right?
Yeah, but he was much different 20 years later. He was actually protecting different groups of people within Libya that aren't being protected.
I think that was a bad idea. But I don't. I'm saying these people are not good people. And when you start choosing one,
well,
to
they're
the
not.
Other, when you
but who's worse? The people that replace them.
Well, okay. It's like not liking a chairman of a company and get rid of him, and the next guy's even worse. It happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
What about a professor? You don't like a professor, you get rid of him, and you put a new guy in there, and he's worse.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, if we traded these people instead of,
you're not going to get that. You're not going to even argue that.
I think we'd be much better off.
Okay, but I guess you could have told everybody. I mean, the history of the world is, Mike Rayko's right. They got it. We want it. Let's take it.
Yeah. I had this. I tweeted this thing about this author that wrote this article about the streaming wars, and I said, you know, the streaming wars is actually not a correct way to describe it. It's not streaming wars. It's streaming competition. Because what war is used for is to destroy competition so you can create a monopoly, drive up prices, and reduce your quality. You don't have to provide any customer service, really, if you're a monopoly, right? Competition is a beautiful thing. It brings down prices, it raises quality, and it might do both, right? So this idea that these companies are at war, they're not at war.
We got to break here, Carl. Or hell, always remember, competition is the best thing in the world for every industry but yours. And yours, it's
exactly.
And yours, it's cutthroat competition. SPV,
that's exactly what the State Department and our Trade Administration.
Well, how about second half hour? You tell me what the Fed's going to do and what's going to do in the market.
Okay.
SPV futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 48. By the way, you never answered my question. Should we redo these old ships or build new ones? And can we do either? Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 52. Kind of a mirror image from yesterday. Yesterday we were, S&Ps were up 13 or 14, so we're just about right there, and NASDAQ was up 60. So we're about the exact same spot over in Europe. Now, again, it's a big news week, and some would say that after this week, we probably kind of snooze into the 4th of July. That's what kind of we used to do, but we don't really do anything we used to do anymore. So we'll see. UK wage growth, 6%. Yeah, they'd say they're doing better than we are, if that's a legit number. The DAX down 140.8%, FTSE down 74.9%. Check around, this is second day now, over 1%, 1.2%. They had the big, we talked about it yesterday with John Flanagan, the election for the European Parliament of the French people went against the current group that is in power. So Macron is basically saying we're going to dissolve Parliament. We're going to have a snap election trying to get his group back up on top. We'll see if that works or if he's just being a little too crazy with that. Time will tell on that. The Nikkei up 96.2%. Hang Seng down 190. Another 1% move. 18,176. Again, a long way from the 19,000 they just were. Shanghai down 23.8%. 3,028. Another day like that, and they're in danger of going under 3,000, which they haven't been for a while. Bonds. We've got down 4 basis points, 4.43. The Bund down 4, 2.63. Japan down 2, 1.01. Still hanging over 1. Oil. Down 36 cents, 77.38. Brent down 28 cents, 81.35. Natural gas up 11 cents, 3.01. Back over 3 bucks in the middle of the summer. Very strange. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.39. Gold, which has been getting clobbered, is actually up 4 bucks now, 23.31. Silver down 34 cents, 29.52. Copper up down 6 cents, 4.48. We've got foreign exchange. Euro 107.3, same as yesterday. The British pound 127.4, pretty much the same as yesterday, so not much going on there. Crypto, however, whack, down 2,800, 66,806. It was over 70,000, I think, on Friday, so that's a big move there. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and Sox. 4-0 in the eighth inning, and then all of a sudden the other guys get 4 and then 4. Ouch.
Right, yeah, man. So it's currently 7:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 55 degrees right now with a high of 73. Beautiful with times of clouds and sun. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a shower in spots with a low of 64 degrees. In Phoenix, Arizona, we got 76 degrees right now with a high of 110. Today's going to be hot with plenty of sunshine, and there is a danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for extended periods of time. Tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, you're looking at 33 minutes if you're inbound Kennedy from Monroe's. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook is 52 minutes. 40 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. You're looking at 24 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. And finally, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 49 minutes. On the sports, the White Sox lost to the Mariners 8-4 yesterday. And today they're playing again, the White Sox and the Mariners, at 8:40 p.m. Additionally, today we got a couple more games. The Cubs play the Rays at 5:50. P.M. and the Diamondbacks play the Angels at 8:40 p.m. We had the NBA Finals game last week, Finals Game 2. The Celtics win 105-98 from the Dallas Mavericks. And Game 3 is going to be tomorrow, Wednesday, June 12th at 7:30 p.m. in Dallas, Texas. Additionally, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals Game 2 was recently, and the Panthers scored 4 unanswered to claim Game 2 over the Oilers. Back over to you, Chief.
So, Hal, the original question before we get into the esoterics of war and who's at fault, if we decide, if anybody could ever agree on anything in Congress, if somebody say, you know, we're short 50 supply ships of various types. By the way, now you were on a nuclear ship, so maybe you didn't need so much supply. You still needed food, I think. We're going to drag 35 of them out of mothballs. We're going to make 15 new ones. Do we have anywhere near the capability for that, and how long would that take?
Well, I think in the age of social media, I think it's, you know, looking for a compromise. I don't think it's going to happen. I think people have to feign outrage to signal their voters that they're on their side. And I think politics is a reflection of social media, and I think social media is a reflection of politics. And you got people on the left who have their talking points, and it's a very binary choice. If you disagree with me on one thing, you're not on my side. And the same thing's true on the right. I'm in the middle of this, trying to have a conversation with people, and it's impossible.
Hey, good luck with that.
It's impossible.
Oh yeah.
Right. So that's the question: to will this be resolved? I don't think it will. The next part of the question was: should we refit these mothballed supply ships? Well, you know what? I'm going to upset a lot of people on the left with this comment. I don't think so. I think that anything that raises the probability of war, we shouldn't do. I'm going to also upset people on the right. When Trump said we need to slap tariffs on Chinese imports of steel for national security purposes, I disagree with that 100%. And the reason why I say that is because if we make China a trading partner, we buy their subsidized steel at a deep discount. One, we get a good price for it. Two, we create a valuable trading partner. And three, when you buy a haircut from your barber and that barber receives your cash and you receive that great haircut from your barber, you're not going to kill your barber. Trade is the tide that lifts all boats. And when goods cross borders, troops don't. So I want to lower the probability of war. I don't think we should be thanking the Chinese for their subsidization of the steel that we're buying from them. We should be thanking them for that. And if we buy it from them, there's going to be less chance of war because they want to continue to sell it to us. So I say let's do things that lower the probability of war, not raise it.
That's the economic mantra that every professor I've ever been around has had.
But I was in the military, and I can fix automobiles.
I know. I'm saying is why if I don't even necessarily like my farmer friend next to me, but if he's better at raising corn and I'm better at cows, how about I take care of the cows and you take care of the corn?
And his corn can feed your cows, and your cows can feed his kids.
I'm right with you. Yeah. Yet for some reason, there's always somebody or some country or some place that doesn't want to play by that rule. And the only reason why they won't,
I think most of the time it's some mercantilist, some established incumbent firm or aristocratic family of America or England or whatever, some entrenched powerful elite who has a product that needs to be sold, and they want to block out the competition, and they want to be the only supplier of some good in some foreign nation. And when you have that dynamic going on, is our system is not capitalism. Our system is mercantilism.
But hell, I guess to go back to the lesson Lou gave me, they're not wired like you and me. Yeah. You can have this discussion. You're going to get me on your side. You're not going to get the goofball that runs North Korea on your side.
Yeah.
He just doesn't think like you. I think
there's a really good show I'm watching for the third time. It's called The 100. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but it's futuristic dystopian. It takes place 100 years after a nuclear war that wipes out the world. And these people in space, they're called, I forget what they're called, but they somehow have to come to the ground. You got the grounders versus the sky people. They're called the sky people, sky crew. You got the sky people and you got the grounders, and then you got the mountain men, the humans that live in these underground bunkers for 100 years. And in everybody's perspective, they're the good guy. And Clark at one point tells her mom, a doctor on sky crew from the sky people, after a war where innocent people are killed, she tells her mom that I try to be the good guy. And the mom says, maybe there's no good guys, right? We have to put ourselves in other people's shoes. We have to be empathetic. We have to look at it from their perspective.
But it takes two to do that.
I know, it does, yeah. And if we have more of that instead of these mercantilist agreements that lead to war, I think we'd have a safer and more peaceful world.
I'd love you to be right, but you don't need to convince me. You need to convince Z and Putin.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Well, I think we need to convince the president and the guy from the senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham.
Every time that anybody has decided to become a total pacifist, somebody comes after him if you got something of value.
Well, you know, Jack Kemp did one thing. One of the greatest comments of all time in a presidential debate that I remember ever hearing was Jack Kemp was accused of being a hawk. And he said he was a dove, but a heavily armed dove.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But you could go to any kind of jail. I mean, there's always, you could have, you know, you've got, well, you have four kids, and I'm sure they're all good. But there's people we know that have eight kids. Seven of them are perfect, and one of them is just different.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go to county jail here in Chicago, and I think you could make nobody better than you because you actually care about people. You could say, you know, if I were to teach you this trade, you can actually, over the next 10 years, you're going to make a hell of a lot more money because you're not going to be in jail half the time than you are stealing cars.
Well, you know,
But you can have that debate all you want. You can win the debate with me, but maybe you're not going to win the debate with the other guy. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. By the way, I'm going out to steal a car. I mean, everybody's just not like us. You know? I mean, they're just not.
Well, a lot of times, those bad seeds are a result of a moral hazard.
Okay, right? But maybe.
Where the person is never punished or has to pay the cost of wrongdoing. Right,
but
that leads to worse and worse behavior. A lot of times it's moral hazards.
I'm going to say, again, I want to get more toward the market here. I'm going to say that I could probably, I don't know that much. I've read a bunch of stuff about the dude, but I don't know everything about the guy's life. I'm going to say that Hitler had a really bad upbringing. His dad didn't like him.
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah. His dad probably had all kinds of insecurities.
Yeah, his dad didn't like him. Somebody didn't like him. Then he went in the army, and he was this little guy, he was from wherever the hell he was from, Bohemian corporal. I'm sure, who knows, he might have been abused. He might have been everything else. They probably thought he was whatever, gay in those days or something. And then he lived on the streets of Vienna for a while. I mean, he had just a horrible... But I sympathize with all of that. But whenever he starts killing people, I don't care. I got to take the guy out. I
mean, well, yeah, no. But again, that's a failure of us.
It is, but I at some point, you cross over. You got to protect other people from whoever.
But
it
again,
is.
Again, it's again a failure of us not learning from history. Hitler would never have risen. And Hitler was the bad apple, and he replaced something that was bad. Right. It goes. This is a thing what we think is bad, and we get something that's worse.
If it wasn't for somebody like Roosevelt, that could have happened here. We had all kinds of they didn't call them Nazis here. What was the name they used for them?
There were Nazis in the United States.
That was not the term they used. They had a massive rally in Madison Square Garden. It was
Nazis. We had the KKK.
I'm saying there was a name for them. It was the German Nazi group, but they didn't call themselves Nazis.
Yeah.
There was another name for it. Anyway, what is going on here? What's the Fed going to do tomorrow? What's it going to help?
I don't think they're going to raise rates. I don't think they're going to change anything. We have Treasury auctions that are problematic, that are kind of pushing yields up. I think, you know, I've heard this term called fiscal dominance. Fiscal dominance is this idea that the Fed really can't do anything from here on out because the deficit's gotten so bad that rates are going to go up. I just don't see how inflation is going to come down because we're spending like drunken sailors. I was a drunken sailor, so I can say it, right?
Yep.
We're spending like drunken sailors. We want to start all these new wars. Our defense budget is what, $600-700 billion, almost $1 trillion.
It's almost as much as our interest. Well, it's about the same.
Our interest payments are almost $1 trillion, if not already there, right?
They're about equal. I'll get the number for you. Keep talking. I'll get the number.
Yeah. So we have all this. We have all this pressure on the deficits to stay high, and I think the one reason why we haven't entered an official recession is because our deficits are $1.6 trillion. We're deficit spending, and that's what's holding us out of a recession. When we finally go into recession, what's the deficit going to be? $3 trillion.
We're not in a recession because we're lying on a PCE number. If we weren't lying on that, we'd be in one.
Oh, we'd be in recession. But think about this. The powers that be are telling us that we're not in recession. Well, if everything they say is correct, the only reason why we're not is because we have a budget deficit of $1.6 trillion. We have fiscal stimulus when we shouldn't be stimulating the economy. If we were truly in an expansion, we wouldn't need $1.6 trillion in fiscal stimulus in the form of a $1.6 trillion deficit. So what happens when we actually go into a really bad recession? What's the deficit going to be then? What?
All right, here you open up this can of worms. Largest budget items are Medicare, Medicaid, $1.8 trillion.
Yeah.
Social Security, $1.4 trillion. But that, according to Carl, is pretty much covered. It's only like $100 billion or something. I don't know what the exact number is. $100 or $150 billion short on the contribution. So that one's almost like a non-entity, even though everybody thinks it is.
Well, I think long-term it can be a problem because you're going to have fewer and fewer people working. And, you know, well, because AI and robots and automation are going to, you know, take more and more jobs. But, so maybe you have to tax AI to pay.
But Carl did the math. He said if you raised everybody's retirement age like a year and a half and you raised the Social Security contribution by like a 5% or something, all of a sudden you're okay. In other words, it's pretty close. It's nothing like Medicare, Medicaid, which is 40%.
Well, inflation is causing people to put off retirement.
Without a doubt. Well, here you go. Here's the numbers you're looking for. Defense / war, $897 billion. Interest on national debt, $866 billion. Did you ever? I've asked everybody else. Did you ever come clean with your opinion as to why, if you look at the national debt, if you look at the deficit every year, how the national debt is growing a lot faster than the deficit would lead you to believe? What items are off book?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean. Is it just government being sneaky, not being transparent? I don't know what's going on.
Well, I mean, if you look at There was an article. God, I think I sent it to you. Now, where could I find it? I have no idea. Some lady wrote an article on the reporter who actually writes really nice stuff. And how she got this one published, I have no idea. It had to do with if you look at our deficit is going to be this year, what, a trillion? Let's say it's a trillion five,
roughly.
It's a trillion five, trillion seven. Yeah. But she said we're actually picking up, which would be. We'd be picking up $1 trillion worth of debt every 8 months, right?
Yeah.
It's actually every, like, 3 months
yeah.
or 4 months. So it's much more rapid. Now, my question is, where's all the other dough, and who decides what they count and what they tell you about and who doesn't? Which doesn't? Who's that guy?
All I know is it's not sustainable. It is not sustainable, and interest rates aren't going down anytime soon. I don't think the Fed can do anything about it.
Well, it's sustainable if you pour more money into the system and the money you deflate the currency and you're paying people back with money that's worth half as much as when they gave it to you.
Yeah, and there goes your inflation, right?
Yeah.
We have a hyperinflation.
But then we lie about the inflation, say there isn't any.
Yeah. So I just don't see the Fed doing anything. I don't think they're going to change. I think they want to lower interest rates. I think they really do, but I don't think they can. And even if they did lower the interest rates on the low end, I don't think they would affect long-term interest rates.
Well, how do you...
I don't think it would. I don't think it would affect market rates much. I mean, they could pull that down.
Well, they need to drop the money supply.
Yeah.
Or at least stop the growth.
You look at lending. You look at consumer lending. You look at total lending in the United States. It's going up. It's not going down. It's going up. So banks are creating money through lending.
Well, margin loans in the market are going up because everybody wants in the market.
You know, one person that I used to respect was Don Luskin. I saw Don Luskin yesterday on Fox Business Network with, I think, Maria.
I thought you were going to say you saw him on the subway with you.
No. I saw him. He spoke on, like, Neil Cavuto's show, I forget what show it was on, but he was, like, calling the guy that was on right before him an idiot. And whenever you call people names or you call their ideas crazy without explaining why you think they are that way, I think you've lost the argument. And I think
when I heard him speak,
all I could hear him say is, I want the Fed to lower interest rates and expand the money supply so the stock market goes higher so I get wealthier, right? That's what he is basically saying.
He or the other guy?
That was Don Luskin.
Well, that's what everybody wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Fed's new job is to maintain the wealth bubble.
And he's denying the fact that Main Street's getting crushed by this inflation that apparently he doesn't care anything about.
Main Street doesn't count.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, exactly.
We have, in as much as Main Street, I don't want to do what you just said. Main Street is dumb enough to actually cheer the demise of unions. Now, I'm not a massive union guy in terms of that they get, you know, too bureaucratic and become sloppy as well as, you know, big corporations. Yeah, they did, but at least people in what used to be the middle class should at least recognize that the fact that they were a force in Washington, and maybe they didn't even want to do it this way, but their agenda lined up with the middle class agenda pretty good. And with them gone, we got nobody out there talking about.
Well, I mean, I think the key is we got to stop this whole Fed thing. I mean, we have all these people. That's the real driver. And I think the what DC is doing.
What do you mean we have to stop the Fed thing? What does that mean?
Well, what the Fed is doing. I mean, we hear these people on these cable news finance shows talking about every time the Fed speaks, they got to listen. We got to stop listening to the Fed. The Fed is not a market institution.
Well, it certainly is a market power now. If you're
well, I mean,
if I'm not listening for my clients, boy, they're going to fire me in a second.
No, it's not, the Fed is not a free market institution. It is a state institution that its purpose is to create inflation. That's what the Fed is.
Its purpose is to be an independent organization.
But it's not independent. There's no way it's independent.
I get that part. Is there going to be an independent? It's sort of like, can the mayor of the city of Chicago really appoint a person to oversee city government in an impartial way?
No,
he can't. It's impossible. But now, once in a while, you do get a president, and as much as everybody can't stand Jimmy Carter, for whatever reason, the man put Volcker in charge and said, you are in charge.
Yeah.
Now, nobody since then has done that.
Yeah. Yeah, but Ronald Reagan kept him there too, right?
He could have. There's no way he could have pulled him out of there. He was known as the independent. No way could even Dutch pull Volcker out of there.
I know, and I think Jimmy Carter and Reagan keeping Volcker there, appointing him and keeping him there, was probably, in my opinion, Volcker. If you had to pick the best Fed chair, it'd have to be Volcker, in my opinion.
I would say to a point.
Yeah.
And the reason why I question that, Alan, I get no, be another argument I can't win.
Who's less bad?
Well, I think that he did the right thing, money supply way. I mean, he did what he had to do to pull the inflation down, okay? But he did it in such a way, it was so heavy-handed. I don't think he realized, either should have realized, didn't realize, whatever, that this, even if the CPI is straight, which I don't think it is anymore, if it's straight, it's a lagging indicator, and I don't quite know why, but it is. The last 8-9 months that he kept his foot on the brake on the economy, I don't think he had to do it. And the thing that happened there is when I was in school, I sort of suspect this, because guys were talking about it in the University of Chicago. They were really into the politics at the time. There was a much closer connection between you guys, the economic professors, and government back then. That's why you deregulated airlines. That's why you deregulated railroads and those kinds of things. There was a real, give and take between guys with your opinion, basically laissez-faire economists, and the Congress. Otherwise, you would never have done that. You would never have deregulated those areas, right? That's why the CBOE was born the way it was born, with competing market makers, not a special system. That all came out of academia, and I haven't seen it before or since. But there also was this.
Well, I think in academia, there's a definitely shift back to the butt-in school.
Right? But the academia was appalled at essentially the savings and loan system.
Yeah.
How that risk should be spread countrywide, and how it didn't make any sense to have one in every neighborhood where the people in the neighborhood had their money in the mortgages, sort of like the Jimmy Stewart model from the movie, right? It really hadn't changed much since then. Since Bailey's.
Well, the banking system in the United States has always been suspect because a lot of states would set up, you could open a bank, but you couldn't expand your bank out of a county, or you couldn't expand your bank out of a state.
Illinois was big on that. You couldn't have branch banking. You couldn't have. Yeah. But,
and that just puts too many eggs in one basket.
Okay, well, actually doesn't. If you can't expand, it makes more. Yeah. But my point is I think his the savings and loans started to flex their muscles a little bit and get checking accounts, which they were never allowed to do. I think he purposely put the savings and loans out of business.
Yeah.
And I think that was a horrible idea.
I think that was the same thing that happened during the last when Greenspan lowered the federal funds rate to 1%, and then over the course of a year and a half, he raised it from 1% up to 5.5%.
Yeah,
and it really put a lot of credit unions underwater. It really put a lot of stress on small regional banks.
Yeah, well, then they always are a tool of the big banks, and that's got to stop. The savings and loans were essentially put out of business by Volcker.
He went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, I think, in 2003, with interest rates at 1%, was begging credit unions to make fixed-rate mortgages at 1%, and then he proceeded to raise the federal funds rate up to 5.5%. I mean, who does that? Right?
Well, you do it if you're doing something for the top
the
four
big banks.
The big banks.
And here we go back to where we went full circle. This is a mercantilist system. It's not a free market system.
Well, anybody who thinks that the current mortgage system is better than the savings and loan system, I got a bridge for you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some pieces of it that might be a little better, but there's nothing that said that savings and loans couldn't have, entered some kind of a risk pool for the mortgages. They, there's nothing that said they couldn't have done that, but they couldn't wait to get those guys out of business.
Yeah.
The thing
about Volcker, though, that a person from Chicago would appreciate is the fact that he was probably the closest to the Milton Friedman model.
Sure.
Because what he didn't really worry about the fluctuation in interest rates. What he focused on was growing reserves.
But the money supply is a direct.
Yeah.
I mean, if the federal funds rate, we only have a couple of minutes, but federal funds rate, the Fed, when they say they set that, now there's not much Fed funds back and forth because the Fed does a lot of the borrowing but and lending. But it, what they're saying is there's money in the pool, okay? And the Fed funds rate, at the end of the day, if a guy like Hal takes a $30 million check out of one of the big banks and puts it in another bank, chances are the one he took it out of doesn't have enough reserves for tonight. So what they do is they enter the Fed funds market and they say to the second bank, where Hal dumped his money, I need to borrow $20 million overnight. What's the Fed funds rate? Now, but that's an independent, supposedly competitive number. And what the Fed does is manipulate the money supply, the amount of money in the pool, to where that number either goes up or down because of the availability of funds, correct?
Yeah, so under the old system, it would buy and sell bonds from banks to keep the federal funds rate steady, right?
Right.
Or it would try to, what Volcker was trying to do, he was trying to smooth reserves, which allowed for the fluctuations in that rate. So but, I think Volcker was the closest to the Milton Friedman model.
But if you tracked, which I have them here on a spreadsheet someplace if I could find it, if you track the inflation in those days versus the growth in the money supply, it was dead on. You know, in 1977, the growth in money supply was 12%. Guess what? The next 6 months, the inflation was 12%.
I think it's because Volcker
it's the same way it is now. I mean, it's the same way it is now. They're just denying it. They increased the money supply by 40%.
I think a lot of it was the way Volcker was managing the money. I'm not going to say that I like Volcker. I'm just saying he's the least bad.
Well,
and what Volcker was doing is he didn't care about the fluctuations in interest rates. He was really focused on smoothing reserves.
Well, we have to the real job of one of these guys that Hal and I are, if they're independent, if the Congress says next year we're going to spend $1 trillion, and by the way we're going to tax $800 billion or $200 million short, an independent Fed would say, buddy, you better tax it or you better borrow it because I'm not printing it and giving it to you.
Yeah.
And now,
I agree with that. If we're going to keep the Fed around, what the Fed needs to do is just look at M2 and ignore everything else.
Right,
just
but they're not.
M2.
Yeah. Right now, they're financing the deficit by just putting money in.
They are.
And that's what's caused the inflation and everything else.
And they are enabling Congress.
Yeah, they're enabling Congress.
Is addicted to fiscal stimulus, fiscal deficits. And if California had a central bank, California would be $1 trillion underwater.
Well, this guy was on the monetarist route. He was actually, when he first got the job, he was cutting back on the money supply, and we were starting to see the market go down. He went over to the White House for dinner with Trump, and I don't know if they waterboarded him or they paddled him. When he came out, the policy all changed. Or they threatened his family or something.
Every president criticizes the Fed until they're president.
Well, right? I don't know what he threatened his family or what he did, but all of a sudden the policy changed the next day, and it's been changed since, right?
Yeah.
S&P futures down 15, NASDAQ futures down 58. No, he's not independent. Talk to you next week. Hal, have a nice week, buddy. I'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.